Take me where the promise rings are real.
My name is Misty, and I am a grateful alcoholic. Hi, welcome to the Monday night 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers meeting here at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tell his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeaker.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say yes. I am one of them, too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is a very good friend of mine, someone that I know I could call at any time of the day, any day of the week, any week of the month, any month of the year, and she would be right there. When I first came into the program, I would come into these rooms and I would see her, because she wears the tinsel in her hair, right? And I would see her and I would notice her, and she was doing the thing. She was doing the readings from the book. She was being discussion leader. She was doing all of these things and fellowshipping with all these women. And I thought, man, I want to be her friend. One day I'm going to be her friend. And today I am her friend. And I get to introduce her tonight, so I give you guys Kat.
Hey, y'all. I'm Kat. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sponsor. I have sponsees. My sobriety date is 5/22/10, so I have 14 years. We'll just start at the beginning. I was born here in Atlanta, 76. I wish it was 86. 76. I'm a Halloween baby, so my parents always had a theme for my party. My initial part, like, my little brother was born in 86. There's where that number comes from. But pretty much those 9 years before he was born, I was the daughter. I was the, hey, Rusty. I was the daughter. I was the son. You know, I get basketballs, footballs. I'd go and play in the yard and things like that, but also ballet. But it was kind of normal. And then my little brother was born. And the year that he was born, I also started having seizures. So January he was born, June I started having seizures. So my parents were dealing with a newborn and then also trying to figure out what to do with me and, you know, how to handle it. And, you know, I've been seizure free for over 20 years now. So, which is amazing. Take medication, all that stuff. Once my brother was born, I didn't know it at the time because I'd wanted a sibling for so long. It was one of those that it was like, yes, mom's pregnant. You know, I was in the delivery room when he was born, and I'm like, yes, not going to have a kid. That's gross. 24 hours of labor. I mean, 26 hours of labor for him. He was 9 pounds, 4.5 ounces. And I stayed in the room the whole time. And so it was, you know, it was fun. But I was the first one to hold him after the doctors and my mom and my dad. Which was great. I have a little picture of little me and baby Matt, and, you know, it's great. Well, then, as time, we'll kind of keep moving forward. As time went by, my father, my biological father is an alcoholic. He died of alcoholism a few years ago, I think 2019. And so in between when my brother was born, and then I guess when I went to college, he started getting pretty bad. I remember my dad, he would sit there and yell at me and, punch a hole in the wall right next to my head because I wouldn't stop crying. And You know, I remember one of the things he said to me was, you know, you're nothing but a piece of shit. Nobody's going to ever want to marry you. You know, and for a father to say that to a daughter, that's just not something that should ever be said. Plus, screw him, I have a husband. So, you know, it got to the point where, like, he was very abusive to my little brother and to my mom when I was away at college and I didn't know anything about it. They didn't tell me for a long time. You know, I heard stories about things that he had done to them. And when I moved back, I went to school at Ole Miss. That's kind of when my partying started because, you know, in high school I smoked alcohol. You get it? You know, of course I was drinking and everything, but trying, guys, there's a lot of drugs in my story, so I'll try and keep it alcohol form. So I tried it, didn't really do a lot because of me being epileptic, my parents I felt like I was kind of in a bubble wrap, you know, they're always watching me, they're making sure that, you know, everything was okay. And you know, even when I was seizure-free, it was just like, oh, well, she can't do this because she's got epilepsy, or she can't do this. What if she has a seizure? So when I went off to college, it was kind of like, you know, all my medications say do not take with alcohol or do not drink on these drugs, you know, taking this medication. Go off to college, what do? Start drinking, you know. And that's kind of where it kicked off. And with my biological father being an alcoholic, with my cousin died by suicide because of alcoholism, my uncle died here recently because of alcoholism, so it runs very strong through my bloodline. When I was there, so went off to college, started drinking, and there was a powdered form of alcohol that I tried. And of course, when they said it, you know, they were like, here, you want to try this? And I was like, isn't that addictive? Oh, no, don't worry about it. Here I am, Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, I started partying. I always tell people I got my PhD at Ole Miss, my party hard degree, because I was literally asked not to come back by a letter in the mail. Because I was on academic probation, academic suspension. They allowed me back. I was on academic probation. And then they said, don't come back. And I was like, okay, but I'm not going back to home with mommy and daddy where they can watch over me. So I stayed there for a few years. I came back to Atlanta in 1999 because I remember, you know, the whole Y2K, everything's going to end and, you know, everything is just going to be the end of the world. And so I remember being at this bar. No matter where you go, you find your people. And I remember being at this bar that was across the street from where I lived. And the owner of the bar, at midnight on New Year's Eve, he cut the power. Uh-huh. And so, I mean, it was hysterical. And, of course, you know, those of my kind, we were on certain things. And, you know, the lights were all doing this number and everything. And then all of a sudden there was no lights. I'm like, wow, man. That was one of my multiple things. You know, if you name a drug, I've pretty much done it. I'm just kind of hit that right there. I'm going to say it because it's my story. Weed, I've done that, dealt that. Cocaine, done that, dealt that. Heroin, I did a form of it. Crack, didn't like it. Because I like cocaine better. Meth. I mean, I think it's one or the other, you know? But I've pretty much done everything. The only thing I have not done is use needles. So that's kind of I'll leave that with my drug experience. Or try to. So when I was just moved back from Atlanta, I was really into ecstasy. Oops, sorry, I forgot to. That's it for that one. But so I'd go to clubs and, you know, there's a bunch of bars in Atlanta that were like all night clubs, and some of those who are around for a while know, like Club Anytime. And there's this one place called Fred's that I went to and I spent New Year's Eve at, and that one was, I ended up driving home and I was high as a kite, and I can't believe we made it home. And that's the thing about me and my story is that I did a lot of driving on everything. I would be drunk and I'd drive. I'd be on, you name the drug, I'd be on it and I'd drive. I'm very lucky that I did not kill anybody or myself. my, I don't want to do a drunkalogue, and I'm trying not to do a drunkalogue because we all have those. We all have our experiences with being out and, you know, all the different things, the driving drunk or, you know, whatever. I will go to my first DUI. It was in 2006. I hit a tree head-on on the other side of the road in Cobb County. I came to, and I did it in a blackout. I came to, and a guy was pulling me out of my car, and he was on the phone, and I've got, somehow, I just, you know how you get sober real fast? Well, that happened. He's on the phone, don't call the cops, don't call the cops. Somehow, I found my cell phone in there, and this was back in the day for those people that you had the, like, brick cell phone. So I found that phone, I called my mom, and I was like, I just had a DUI, blah, blah, blah. Well, then I blacked back out, and the next thing I know, there's a cop there, my parents had made it. But I'm leaning on the cop car, kind of like this, you know, and they're like, ma'am, I need you to walk a straight line for me. I go, look at me. Look at my car. You think I can walk a straight line? And they're like, just, I need you to do it. Just please. And of course, I'm in my work clothes, and I was a hostess. So I had on flats, but they were still my shoes and the dress, whatever. And so I was like, well, can I take my shoes off? And he's like, you do you. So I did it, took three steps, and, you know, obviously didn't happen. And he ended up taking me to Cobb County. Count on being busted. Mm-hmm. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Mm-hmm. But I only spent, luckily that time, I only spent a few hours in there before my parents got me out. I remember once I got out, you know, I had to go back and do the remaining of the 24 hours. When I went back in, like a good alcoholic, the girl I was living with had a sleeping pill, you know, some type of muscle relaxer or something like that. So when I went in to turn myself in for the remaining time, I popped the pill. So all I had to do was sleep for the remaining 10 hours, 12 hours, whatever. So I remember, you know, signing in, all that stuff, getting into the holding cell, and I just kind of sat there. Well, when I woke up, there was like a whole different crew of people around me, and I'm like, was I snoring? They're like, no, you're good. So I went right back to sleep. But so that was like November-ish of 2006. And then end of June, I got my second DUI. You know, because doing community service, paying all the fines, all that stuff, it's not going to stop me. I'm not an alcoholic. So I got my second one June, again, Cobb County. Count on being busted, call on bail bondsman, whatever you want to say. That's still now, being a sober person, I do not like going into Cobb County. I will avoid that at all costs. Normally I get my husband to drive when we're going that direction. I'm like, unless I absolutely have to. Second DUI, there was nothing special. It was just I got pulled over. And I'm very lucky. I will say that with all the times that I drove drunk, I didn't hurt anybody. Because there was times that I literally remember taking my hair and rolling it up in the window so that when I'd fall over, I'd hit my head on the, you know, in the windshield. Or if I started to do this number, it would pull me back up. And I had my little ways. I think we all did. So that was my second DUI in Cobb County, and of course I had to do more stuff. But the judge, when I went to court, the judge said, okay, you have two options. And I was like, okay, he said, you can either do 9.5 months in jail, or you can go to rehab and do 90-90, and then all of the probation and all that stuff. And so I was like, I'll take option number two, thanks. For me, at the time, it was good because the rehab that I went to, it was up in North Carolina. We had horses we could ride. We had cats we played with and dogs we played with. It was like a month-long vacation with a little bit of Big Book in there. So I didn't get too terribly much out of it. And then I remember when my parents came to pick me up after the 28-29 days, I remember when we left, we drove by this Mexican restaurant, and they're like, you want to stop and get something to eat? And I'm like, nope. All I wanted to do was get home and just be at home in my bed. And so I remember coming here for a meeting because of the 90 and 90, and I found a sponsor. and I didn't use her. She signed her name for me, and that was it. You know, go to meetings, get the sheet signed, do what I had to do, didn't use a sponsor, didn't call anybody. I just sat in the back in rehab row and didn't do shit. And then I stayed sober. I think after I got done with all of my requirements and going to see my probation officer and, you know, the drug testing and all that stuff, I think I stayed dry, definitely was not sober for another month, 2 months, and then I finally said, screw it, and I started drinking again. And how they talk about, you know, when you start drinking after you've stopped, and they talk about your disease doing push-ups out in the parking lot, it's true, because I literally, you know, I started drinking, and then within 2 days, I was calling my dealer. And, you know, the thing is that it really did not give me this number, but that is one, like, I had my dealer's number memorized, I had my bar's phone number memorized, and then, of course, my mom's, our home number, because we had them at that time, for all you young ones over here, and my mom's cell phone. So those are the numbers, and I still remember the bar's phone number, which is now, it's no longer a bar, it's now a workout place. It's kind of funny. Go from one extreme to the other. So I continued drinking and using, and it got worse and worse. And I started dating this guy. And I remember one day I came to on a Sunday morning, and he was sitting there, and he goes, I'm going to a meeting. And I'm, you know, I'm thinking in my head, I'm hungover and everything, and I'm like, you've got a work meeting on a Sunday? And so I just rolled over and went back to sleep. I didn't even think about it. And he was gone all day, and I was calling him. And so finally he gets back to the apartment, and I was like, where were you? He said, I went to an AA meeting. I went to a few AA meetings, and I'm like, why? You know, it's like, well, because there's tons of vodka bottles all over the dining room floor. You know, we didn't throw them away. We just left them on the floor. And then if there was like a little bitty sip, we could always drip it. Anyway, you know how we are. And so a week later, I ended up calling him at 2 in the morning, and because I was drunk. I had run over a curb. My tire was flat, and the only person that I could get in touch with was a friend of mine who we'd always go and get drunk together. You know, this guy who'd come and we'd meet when I was off work before the bar would open. We'd go to the bar. We'd open the bar for the owner. The owner would give us a pitcher while we set up, you know, for free, of course, one of our favorite four-letter F words, free. You know, we'd sit there and drink, pull out the chairs, and that would be at 11 o'clock in the morning. But he happened to be asleep in his truck, sobering up. And so when I called him, he came and, you know, he helped me put my flat on. And when I was on that side road and he had showed up, there was a ambulance and a fire truck that went by. Well, this is off of Lake Forest. It's a side street. For those of y'all that know the area, Lake Forest and Roswell Road, there's a side street. Somebody ended up getting into an accident and dying that night at the end of that road. Because I remember, you know, driving on that road and seeing a cross and flowers put up there. So that could have been me. You know, another God thing. So I came in. I was part of Complete Abandon for a while because that's where my boyfriend was. Complete Abandon did a lot for me. They made me be at the meetings an hour early. I fucking hate them. I hated it. They made me stay an hour after the meetings. Hated that. They made me take people to meetings. I hated that. You know, and now I get to meetings early because I love it. I love talking to people. I stay late because I love talking to people. You know, there's the meeting before the meeting, then the meeting, then the meeting after the meeting. And sometimes you get more before and after than you do during. Those things I now love, you know. You know, Complete Abandon did what it did for me at the time. And then I ended up going from Complete Abandon, which was like 90% men, to a woman's meeting here on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, and that became my own group. Then I ended up finally settling over at the Atlanta Biscayne Room. That is where most of my story, my sobriety story, is from. So now this is my sober life. And look at that. I got sober right at the right time, 8:30. Damn, I'm good. So when I went to the skein, I was still one of these. I used to wear a baseball cap. I'd hide in my baseball cap. I'd have a hoodie on, you know, and I'd just kind of sink down. I'd have my baseball cap so that you couldn't see me in the eyes. And the only way you could see me is if I lifted up my head and I looked at you. There's a couple of people over here that came to support me that was there during this time, and they remember all this. But then I started fellowshipping with people. Frank Waters, who I consider my AA dad, he has no problem with, he introduces himself using his last name, so I know he wouldn't mind, but, you know, I kind of held on to him. He had 20 years or something, 25, I can't, whatever. He had a lot of time when I got sober, and he still has a shit ton of time now. And so I kind of held on to that. And, you know, meeting people that have a lot of time or whatever, trying to hang on to those people that have the time is a good thing, because you learn that you can go through death, you can go through divorces, you can go through all this stuff sober. And so when you meet these people that have the 20 years, have 15, 20, 30, you know, my friends over there, they have 40 years of sobriety. And it's like, you know, that's just when I first got sober and they had 30, I can't do math right now, but they had a lot of time. I remember one of them coming in and, you know, it was really upset about a situation that was going on. And I'm not telling the story because this is my story. But it was a very pivotal moment for me, because I remember him just being really upset about something. But he was still sober, you know. And if somebody can come in that has 25, 35 years of sobriety and just be bitching and complaining about something, but he stays sober, it's like, that's what I want. I want to be able to go through something, you know, that's a hard thing and remain sober. And since then, you know, like I said, my biological father died of alcoholism. This was 2019, I believe. And yeah, because I was engaged, wasn't married yet. I remember going, I had to sign the DNR. I had to sign all that paperwork. He kept calling me Barbara. Barbara's my aunt, and we look a lot alike. And so there's, when we finally got him in hospice, he's like in the bed. I'm on one side, she's on the other, and he would be like, Barbara, Barbara, Barb. And so finally she grabbed me, she brought me over, and she's like, look, this is your daughter, Catherine. I am Barbara, your sister. I'm the fatter one, the more wrinkly one, the older one. She's younger, not as fat, not as wrinkly. And I'm like, thanks, Barbara. But I did have a good 5 minutes with him where I remember I was sitting on the bed with him, and he held my hand, he looked at my ring, and he's like, you got to get yourself a good one. And so that meant so much, because it was just like 5 minutes, but he knew who I was. You know, he knew it was me, his daughter. And then, you know, after that, he went back to calling me Barbara and stuff. So, but, you know, I was able to remain sober. I saw my father in that state of organ failure where his skin was tea colored. The whites of his eyes was highlighter yellow. And, you know, people talk about that all the time. And it's like, there's no way. Then I saw it and I was like, holy shit. That's just, I don't want that for myself. And so when I saw that, it was like another kick in the face of, I don't want to go back to my old life. You know, I've got too much going on. I'm engaged. Now I'm married, but at this point, I'm engaged. You know, my family wants me back in their life. You know, my best friend, I was her maid of honor. Well, before I got sober, she was thinking about not even asking me to be at her wedding because of my drugs and alcohol. That I would do. I mean, I would go over to her house to spend time with her. We'd drink beer, but I'd go in her bathroom and do cocaine. That's not a way. You're not spending time with somebody like that. But she loved me through it, you know. So when she got married, I was her maid of honor. When I got married, she was my maid of honor. And, you know, things like that that mean absolutely everything to me. You know, yes, you get sober, and after time, you get your car. I remember when I first got, like, my car when I got sober, I was so excited. It's like, it's my car. I've got the loan. The loan sucked. But still, you know, I had to pay the loan. The loan was in my name. Insurance, everything was in my name. And it's just that whole feeling of that was just amazing, you know? Even though that was a thing, yes, you get your things back, you get this back, but for me, it was all family and friends. And, you know, I look around the room and I see so many people that are here, they're in my life, not only in AA and recovery, but outside of AA and recovery, that have come to support me. I want to go back real quick to the night before I came in when I hit the curb and I had the flat tire. I drove on that flat, that spare tire for probably 9 months of my sobriety. You know, I mean, it was just, you need to get a new tire, you need to get a new tire, you need to get, well, I'm fine, I'll get one next week, I'll get one, you know, and now it's like, okay, it's time to get my tires rotated, it's time for an oil change, you know, I'm taking care of my car, just like I'm taking care of myself. I've got a doctor's appointment, I've got two doctor's appointments in January. You know, it's like I'm doing that for myself because I know if I don't, something's going to end up going wrong that I don't know about or that I could have taken care of beforehand, but I didn't because I was too busy all up some whatever, you know. But today it's like I get to come to these meetings and I get to see you guys and, you know, I get hugs from people when I walk in and I hug people when I walk in. And, you know, when I get to see people more than once or more than twice, it's just like, okay, so I know that person. I've seen that person. You know, that person's part of my life in some shape, way, or form. Somebody, Frank, actually said that, you know, when you're around a lot and you have somebody that you see a lot, it's kind of like they become a piece of furniture because you walk in and you expect it's like, yeah, Rusty's going to be sitting there when I come in. You know, I know he's going to be sitting there. Tim and Tim are going to be sitting back there. You know, Alex, where'd you get? Well, Alex is normally chairing the meeting when I'm not. But, of course, today she threw me for a loop and got Misty. And I was scared for a second. I was like, well, she's not coming. I'm sponsoring her. She better be here. You know, so it's those types of things that I have people that came to support me. And it's because. Because of my sobriety, and I know that if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't have people like this. You know, I'd be doing the old rinse and repeat cycle. Get up, go to the bar, get messed up, pass out. You know, if you're lucky, make it home. Get up, do it all over again. And that was my life. And now I have different things to do. You know, I got married, short story, I got married April... For those of you that know, you know 4/4/2020 is my anniversary. And it was right at the beginning of COVID. And I had this huge wedding planned out, you know, tons of people, blah, blah, blah. And COVID started. I started getting phone calls. Don't feel comfortable. Don't feel comfortable. And so finally, like, I got a phone call actually from my Uncle Greg, the one that just recently passed. And he was like, you know, I'm not comfortable. I don't think we're going to come. And so I got off the phone. I was like, I'm going to cancel it. And so my husband comes outside. I'm sitting down smoking a cigarette, bawling. He comes and he sits down next to me and he goes, you know, we can still get married on that date. And we can just have a big celebration once we can all get together. And I was like, oh, like I didn't even think about it. Like I freak out. I'm way over here. And then here's my husband. Come on down, Kat. Chill out. It's going to be okay. You know, and God put us together for that because, you know, I know that without him, I'd be more bonkers. And for everybody that keeps turning it around, he's the one that's turning around looking at the door. That's Stephen. Came up and read the promises. That's my husband. But we ended up having another wedding, another ceremony, big party. Because I had already paid for a lot of stuff, and so this way I didn't have to pay for, you know, extra. There was just a little bit. Anyway, my brother here recently, he got married, and he had a little boy, Ellis, Oh my God, I'm in love with him. He is the cutest kid in the world. He's got dimples. Oh, I'm just, and he's coming for Christmas. Cannot wait to see him. I don't care how cute you think your kid is. He's like 10 times cuter. Trust me. Trust me on this. I got like a photo album in my phone of like over 500 pictures. So I can show you pictures, videos. I have no problem. Come see me after the meeting.
No.
But it's things like that. You know, my brother said, do you want to come and babysit while we go to a wedding? And of course I'm like, you need to ask, of course. And so my husband and I went up there. He's a Shriner, and so we're always doing stuff for the Shrine, which is Children's Hospital, for those of you. Yeah. Anyway, so I think we had a parade that morning, and then we went to go and stay with Ellis and babysit Ellis. And so I have this picture of Ellis asleep in his little thing, whatever, he's too big for now, but they had him asleep in that, and then Stephen was asleep, like, right behind him, so I took the picture, I was like, it's baby Ellis and my baby, so, but, yeah, and I got really mad at him because Ellis wasn't taking his bottle from me. I was like, what is going on, why aren't you taking my bottle? So Steven's like, here, so he takes Ellis, here, he gets the bottle, puts the bottle in Ellis's mouth, and just Ellis takes it. I'm like, what the fuck, I'm the aunt, what's going on? He goes, well, I have two kids. You want to talk to somebody, I've got a few phone numbers that can tell you I can do this. I'm like, that's not fair. Just because I don't have any kids, Ellis is my nephew. I'm the favorite aunt, even though he can't even say my name yet. He's about to be 7 months old. And I already have an album of 500. Can you imagine what it's going to be like by the time he's a year? But see, that's the thing, is that I've got this right here. I've got this experience. I've got my brother that's like, hey, will you come and babysit your nephew? You know, my brother, he wouldn't want me to come and babysit him when I was drinking and using, you know. He didn't trust me with going down the street to pick up some beer for him, you know. But now he's got that trust. And it's just, life is amazing. My mom and I have a great relationship. We talk almost every day. When I'm on the way home, I call to check in on her. She's 74. She does not look like she's 74, for those of you that know her know what I'm talking about. But still, you know, she's 74. If she were to fall and hurt something, she'd heal a lot slower than if I were to fall and hurt something. Well, I don't know. It depends on what it would be, but haven't been working out lately. My advice to everybody in here is that you have your friends that have, you know, the same amount of sobriety, 2 years, 2 months, 6 years, whatever. My recommendation is no matter what, especially the girls that are here that are in the program, make sure you make a fellowship or you, you know, get to know people that are outside of your program. Because you never know, you're going to turn around twice and people from your program, there's going to be people that are gone. You know, I see new faces all the time with you guys, and there's some that I see constantly, but then there's some that are like, where'd she go? What's going on with her? The best thing to do is if you see somebody who has, you've got 2 months, find somebody that has 2 years. Hell, find somebody, do what I did, and I had maybe less than a year, and I was tricked into going out to eat with Claudia and Alex. And that was thanks to Frank. Frank lied to me. We were at a meeting. I was almost home. And Frank's like, you know, Claudia was asking if you're coming to eat. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah, she was asking. And so I was like, I mean, I was probably 2 minutes away from my house. And I turned around and I like probably flew to this restaurant. And the reason I know is because I got there before Frank and before Claudia and Alex. And so Frank went over to Claudia and told him what he said so that, you know, she'd just be like, okay. She came, sat down next to me. I never knew for at least over a year, maybe 2 years. No clue. And so now I was giving shit about lying to me. But, hey, you know what? It worked. You know, I'm still friends with him now. You know, I consider them my aunt and uncle. You know, I've got Frank Waters is my dad. My aunt and uncle are sitting over there. hell, Santa Claus is sitting back in the back, rusty, you know. I mean, he would always dress up as Santa Claus for the Christmas parties over at Lanibus Game Room. Mm-hmm. And that's how I knew him, you know, and I still consider him that. There's people in this room that I've known for years that just mean the world to me and that I had my first experiences with. My first sober concert I went to, not those kind of experiences, Missy, I heard you. My first sober concert I went to was Tinsley's. I was so afraid of going because I was afraid that, you know, what if, you know, people are going to be drinking around me? What if I'm going to want to drink and blah, blah, blah. Well, I went with a friend of ours and I stayed with her the whole time. I didn't even notice any alcohol. And then the next time I went to a concert was down in Midtown area. I don't remember. Anyway, and I went with a bunch of friends from AA. And so we're sitting there partying, and then all of a sudden I look over and I see, like, all these half, you know, drinks. Was that proper verbiage? Okay. Okay. So I saw all of these up there, and I'm like, I look over and I'm like, oh, how long have those been there? Like, I didn't even, it was not in my wave or periphery. Like, I didn't see it. It was like it was blinded out. But it was great, you know? And then, of course, you're around all these people, and all of a sudden they start getting really hammered and falling all over you and spilling alcohol, and you're like, okay, enough already. I'm out. I saw the good part. I can't handle it anymore. I'll just kind of get to wrapping it up. You know, this past weekend, my life is definitely not boring. I don't sit around anymore. I don't just lay around and do nothing. You know, I come to meetings because I love meetings. I love seeing people. And, of course, the sobriety. You know, I love talking to other people. You know, I go to an eating meeting. Usually it's once a week. Sometimes it's whatever. But because my husband's involved in the Shrine, we have a lot of stuff that we're involved in. So, like, this weekend, I went to my eating meeting, and then we had a Christmas party for my husband's part of the director's staff in the Shrine. So we had a Christmas party for that. And then there was a parade on Sunday. There was literally an all-day thing. And we got up at the butt crack of dawn. We got to breakfast. Then the women were actually allowed to be in the parade, and I believe it was the Hillbilly Parade, Redneck Parade, excuse me. And boy, was it a redneck parade. But it was so much fun. And see, that's the thing, is that, you know, we went out to eat after the parade. The parade was quite a long time. We had to wait for 2 hours before it even stopped. But we were walking around and talking to people, you know, and that's the best thing. Like, I love being social now, and I don't need that liquid courage in order to be social. In the beginning, like, I wouldn't read a reading, much less share. Somebody handed me a reading at 11 o'clock or 11:30 Saturday meeting here, and I handed it to the person next to me because I was like, I'm not going to read. You know, and now I can come up here and tell my story. The first time I told my story, I was up here for all of 4 minutes. That was starting with, hey, I'm Kat, I'm an alcoholic, to, I can't do this, I'm done. And, you know, and thanks to Frank Waters, that's how I know that it was 4 minutes, you know. It was at Winter's Circle, and it was two 20-minute speakers with a smoke break in the middle. Well, obviously, I was the first one, so we had quite a long smoke break. But everybody was coming up to me, and they were like, oh, you did such a good job, it's okay, it's okay. Well, then after the meeting, Frank took me out to eat at Arby's, and he goes, well, you really fucked that one up. I'm like, oh, thanks, love ya. But since then, I've been able to, you know, share and talk to people and not be embarrassed and not feel like I have to have, you know, that safety blanket, which was Frank for such a long time. Now I can go in a meeting and be like, hey, girl, what's up? Not feel bad about it. But it also took time. You know, it took time spending time with people that had a lot of sobriety. It took time with just going to meetings, doing my steps. You know, and I think that's the most important thing. For me, I didn't do my first 4-step until I had a year and a half sober. And a lot of people are like, let's get this done right now. You know, 30 days in, you got to get it done. You got to get it done. Well, for me, I didn't do it until I had a year and a half sober. And, you know, if you don't do it, you're going to get drunk. Well, year and a half in, I do my fourth step finally. I've since done many more. And here I am 14 years later. So you don't have to do it 30 days in. You don't have to do 1, 2, 3, you know, all 12 steps in 2 months. Maybe you do. Maybe that's something you need to do. But for me, I didn't have to do it that way. And the way I did it worked for me because here I am today, 14 years sober, standing in front of people, which I never would have done before. You know, my sponsor, my sponsee, my friend from outside the program, which I cannot believe she's here. She's an amazing girl. People think that we're twins. Hell, her husband's even thought that we were the same person. He smacked me on my ass once, thinking I was her. And then he came and he rubbed my lower back. This is a shrine event. He came and he was rubbing on my lower back and because I was leaning over doing something. Their grandson was next to me. So he goes, don't worry, I've already got him all greased up. And so I sit there, I turn around, and he's like, oh, shit. Well, Renee is like literally, Renee's the one next to my husband. She's like literally two lounge chairs over watching this whole thing go down. I mean, it's just, but see, that's the thing is that today I've got these experiences. You know, I have friends like Renee. I have friends like Claudia and Alex. I have an Al-Anon friend who I call my sister. You know, can you imagine that? Us having friends in Al-Anon? Holy shit. You know, and then I have another person who's here, and my sponsor. It's just there's all these people that are here to support me, and it's not only them that came and drove from Villa Rica. It's all you guys, yeah. It's all you guys that are here to support me. Whether you know it or not, everything I've said tonight has helped me, and I hope that it's helped you guys in some shape, way, or form. If you got a little bitty tidbit of anything, I hope that helps. I was good. I didn't do a drunk log, so thank you very much for letting me come up and tell my story.
As long as I'm around, I'll support you too.
First I slip, and then I crib to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me. Finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. For a heart that beats for me, takes me where the promises are real. And I always long for something that sets me free. See you later.